Good afternoon. My name is Kathy, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Ways to Beat the Heat: Effective Approaches to Heat Island Reduction conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. If you need assistance during the call, please press star, then zero, and an operator will come back online to assist you. I will now turn the call over to Neelam Patel, National Program Manager. Ms. Patel, you may begin your conference.
Thank you. I'd like to echo the welcome you just heard. On behalf of the EPA Heat Island Reduction Program and the U.S. EPA Local Climate Energy Program, I welcome you to today's webcast. My name is Neelam Patel, and I am the National Program Manager for the Heat Island Reduction Program and also a climate analyst for local governments as part of our local government climate and energy program. And I am forwarding to the next slide, which has our agenda for today. As you take a look at the agenda, I do want to share our goals for today's webcast with you. We want to ensure that our audience today, on behalf of the presenters, we want to ensure that we help the audience today understand the science, impacts, and benefits of the heat island and also reducing the heat island effect in your communities. We'll talk about the current and future temperature trends for heat islands. And lastly, we want to demonstrate how communities are and have been taking steps to cool both air and surface temperatures based on their local geographic location as well as their local priorities. And so today I'll start off with a welcome and introduction to the Urban Heat Island Effect and your two host programs. Then Brian Stone from Georgia Tech University will be talking about temperature trends in cities. And you may have seen some of his work. He recently released a book, which you'll hear about, but also this has been cited in some in the Washington Post and other newspapers talking about what we can do to plan for extreme heat in cities. Then we'll move into our case studies. Brendan Reed from Chula Vista will talk about their ongoing climate program and how Chula Vista is invested in cooling their community by focusing on adaptation, being prepared to address the changing climate. He'll be followed by Matt Grubishich from the Texas Tree Foundation, an organization that is strategically planting trees to maximize the cooling effect while attaining other benefits. And he'll talk about how they've partnered with the city of Dallas to work together in their efforts. And the last case study we have will be about the Austin Heat Island Mitigation Program. Austin has a number of diverse initiatives. Norman Muria will talk about those initiatives briefly and focus in on their Cool Roofs program. And as you see, Texas is on here twice, one of the reasons it's hot. But please keep in mind that in other regions of the country, there is you can also feel the effect of the heat island community. Excuse me, the heat island effect. It's just that these communities have more advanced programs and lessons learned that can help develop your programs in your communities. The last piece of our webcast will be a question and answer session. All questions will be answered at the end. You'll be submitting them in writing. And after that webcast is over, there's also an opportunity to provide optional feedback. This feedback is very helpful to us. And so through this feedback and also through poll questions that we'll be asking you after each presentation, it's very helpful to us because it helps understand why heat is important to you in your communities and also what we can do and provide to help you with the planning and implementation process. I'm going to turn it over to Lauren Peterson to give you some information about the webcast.
Great. Thank you, Neelam. You'll be muted throughout the webcast in order to minimize background noise, and you'll be able to submit your questions in writing, and I'll go over that in the next slide and how to do it. PDF and audio files of today's session will be made available at the following links, and I'll send out a message on that so everyone can have those links. And throughout the webcast, if you have any technical difficulties, please email me You can reach me at lpeterson@icfi.com. Next slide. So if you have a question, you'll be submitting this through the question pane, and we're going to compile these questions throughout the webcast and ask them at the end during the question and answer session. Please include the name of the speaker. That'll help us gauge who is supposed to answer which question. You just simply put your question in the box at the bottom and click send, and we'll receive that. And next slide, Neelam. And I'll turn it over to you for the optional feedback.
Great. Thanks, Lauren. As I mentioned in the beginning of the webcast, there is an opportunity to provide EPA and the other presenters with optional feedback. If you can take a few minutes to provide us information on the position that you hold at your organization, what you found useful, and what you are going to do with this information after you get off the webcast, it would be very helpful to us because that helps us help you with future initiatives. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and start off giving you some background on the heat island effect. And I do encourage you throughout my presentation as well as the other presentations to submit questions as they come up. So I'd like to start off by talking about the heat island effect. I'm often asked, where is this island? And I think as most of you are familiar with the heat issue, it is not an issue that's surrounded by water. It's actually dealing with land coverage. And as you can see on this graph, there are certain materials and types of land cover that increase temperatures, both in both air temperatures as well as the surface temperatures of the buildings, the pavements, and whatever else may be covering your area. These temperatures, when we try to define the heat island effect, one of the things we often say is that urban areas tend to be warmer, tend to be hotter than rural areas. And as a maximum temperature difference between these two areas, you can have temperatures in urban areas be as high as 27 degrees more, like to be hotter, 27 degrees hotter than surrounding areas. And oftentimes this temperature gradient leads to many other environmental issues, which I'll mention later in the presentation. I think it's important, you know, as you look at this graph and see that there are the orange lines that represent daytime temperatures and the blue lines that represent nighttime temperatures, I think it's important to realize that the reason we invest in addressing the heat island effect is often because of people's health, and that nighttime piece plays a critical role. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. So going on to the next slide, the causes of the heat island effect. From the last diagram, you could see that where there is vegetation, there is lower temperatures, and that's because of evapotranspiration. So when we have reduced temperatures, the heat temperatures, it does get hotter. The other piece of this, I think Brian will talk a little bit more about this, is that people's activities increase the temperature in the air and buildings. And so, for example, when we run ACs or when we drive our cars, we're adding anthropogenic heat to the atmosphere. And as I mentioned, the land cover is that we have that oftentimes in the past was vegetation, is now has materials that hold heat. Oftentimes our buildings, they hold heat, which increases both the surface temperatures, but also in turn increases air temperatures. And then the last cause that I want to go through for what causes heat islands is urban geometry, and you'll see a diagram of this on the next slide. So here you can see that there are canyons between buildings and in more densely built-up areas, and these are urban canyons. What often ends up happening is the heat that's absorbed by the materials making up the building are reflected and released, and then they are absorbed by a building next to them. And because of these canyons, there's little circulation or convection or wind that moves this heat away. And so that can help, that leads to increasing surface temperatures as well as air temperatures. Here are some images to help display the increase in temperatures of surface, so different surfaces. These diagrams are courtesy of Arizona State University, and these show that paved surfaces tend to have higher temperatures, and you can see the grids in some of in the diagrams where the surface temperatures are warmer. This next slide, urban heat island dynamics, is about the energy balance. And as you can see, there's a number of different factors. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about this, but the main message I want to get across here is that each community is unique. And it's important to understand these different patterns in your community. So, for example, how much energy is coming in, how much is contained within your community, your neighborhood, and how much is going out and how it goes out. Sometimes that's transferred to the subsurface, so, you know, underneath your buildings or underneath your pavements. In other cases, it's going into those urban canyons. There's re-radiation of the energy in those urban canyons, or it can be going out into the atmosphere. So while that's one factor to consider when you are trying to understand how to address the heat island effect or how to cool temperatures in your own community, the other issue to think about is what are those temperatures during the night? Essentially, the nighttime temperatures have a significant connection to people's health. So if traditionally, temperatures all cooled down at night, but as places are getting hotter, the temperatures don't cool down as much. I mean, you can see on this graph that in the past, at 5 a.m., there was a 10 degree Fahrenheit temperature difference. Oftentimes now, we're not having that same magnitude of temperature difference, and so if your nighttime temperatures are not cooling down, that is a reason to think about addressing the heat island effect in your community. So I mentioned we have heat, and there's also other environmental issues that come from higher temperatures. So, you know, one of the reasons that we care about this is because most people these days live in cities, and the impacts of the heat island tend to affect our most vulnerable populations, like the elderly, the young, folks that don't have air conditioning. And as you can see on here listed as human health, there's the higher temperatures, especially in the elderly, can help quicken the onset of existing respiratory issues or health issues. Also, you know, going back to the top of the slide, increased energy use. In the summertime, energy demand increases, and there's been a study done by Lawrence Berkeley National Lab in the past, and this is maybe at least 10 years old, so based on increased temperatures, we could see something different. But the energy demand in the summer is 5 to 10% of that energy demand is just to cool the heat island effect. Also, with increased energy use, there is also increased greenhouse gas emissions and air pollution. The hotter temperatures lead to increased ground level ozone in some communities. And from a water perspective, the materials that lead to heat island effects, like the impervious surfaces, roofs, and pavements, they also increase runoff, stormwater runoff and pollutants in waterways. And the other element is that there's warmer water going in, so the aquatic life is affected. So with all that being said, you know, what can you do to address the heat island effect? At EPA, we promote four basic strategies: trees and vegetation, green roofs, cool roofs, and cool pavements. And you can find more information about these in the appendix of this presentation. There are a number of ways to integrate these mitigation measures, these cooling strategies, into existing programs. And you'll hear about some of these opportunities through connecting heat island mitigation with energy, with other sustainability initiatives, with air quality initiatives, with stormwater initiatives. You'll hear more about those through the examples that we have lined up for you today. So the other thing that you'll hear about through the presentations, but I wanted to point out, is that when you're thinking about how to use these implementation strategies, there's a number of different scales. So in your planning stages, you can think about this from individual buildings, from the community level, your neighborhood, and of course, the larger city level. And as you move into the planning and designing of how you're going to implement strategies, there are a number of different ways to measure the temperatures and co-benefits. And here are just some examples. Oftentimes, and you'll hear this from Matt with the Texas Tree Foundation, it's helpful to partner with academic institutions to get this type of information. So a little bit about your host. About EPA's Heat Island Reduction Program. What we try to do through this program is to increase the number of policies and programs that have heat island mitigation measures. And like I mentioned, and you'll hear through today's case studies, there's a number of different ways to connect. For example, Brendan Reed will be talking about how they used the adaptation work that their community was doing to help cool it. Cool their community. There's a large Heat Island community, and part of what we do is work across all those groups. Our programmatic areas include helping communities or states that are interested in cooling their decreasing temperatures. We help them by providing resources. And that's the technical assistance bubble there. We also have a communications infrastructure where we provide a newsletter, we do seasonal outreach, and we partner with other academic institutions and other organizations to enhance outreach. And the last thing I mentioned is to increase the number of options available so you can implement heat island mitigation strategies. Here are a list of the resources that we offer. We have a pretty detailed website, a calendar of events, a newsroom where we highlight stories about the heat island effect, and this is across the country through all different types of publications. And we have a database of examples that you can check out. We have a compendium of strategies that is a written document that puts together a lot of what you're going to hear today. We have webcasts. Today's webcast will be on the website and past webcasts, and a newsletter that gives information on the heat island effect. What I'd like to highlight here in the compendium is the chapter on heat island reduction activities. There are example voluntary and policy approaches that you can use in your communities. In that chapter, the database we recently updated this in December of 2011 with the help of some students from West Georgia University, and we are always looking for new examples to add. So, if you have an initiative that you'd like us to include, please email us either through the GoToMeeting or through our website. And your other host for today, EPA's Local Climate and Energy Program. I'd like to just talk about some of the goals. Through this program, we try to help communities, tribal governments, regional governments, cities and counties reduce greenhouse gas emissions and also identify partners to work with while achieving multiple benefits. And we have some key resources to offer. We have first the Climate Showcase Communities. And one community I'd like to bring to your attention is the Sacramento County. They have a river-friendly landscaping program which looks at multiple issues, including heat island cooling. And then through this program, we have a number of tools and resources, documents that can help with different climate and energy strategies. And there's several peer exchange opportunities through this program. And there's more information on all of these resources in the appendix. That's my contact information. And as I mentioned, we do have this presentation does contain a number of appendices that can help you develop your programs. And so with that, I'd like to turn it over to our poll question that we have for you, which is to better understand why you're interested in the heat island effect. So if you could take a moment in checking all that apply to explain what your interest is in urban heat, and you may or may your reasoning won't may or may not be, or your reasons may not be included, but if you do see something that would, you know, get people on board in your community, if you could please check that, that'd be great. And then if we could see the results, and if you could please share the results. And it looks like the most interest in urban heat comes from wanting to decrease energy use in the summer, which is great because it helps your community members save energy, and also from improving water air quality and doing work related to climate. All right. That sounds great. And I think that's a great lead up to the